Hey everybody, we got a great episode coming up with Keith, Angel, and Mad Hatter, part of Orange and the Blues documentary. Before we get into that, I just wanted to reach out, see if anybody's into marketing, specifically social media marketing. We got a couple projects we're working on, and we could use a little help with that. So if you or somebody you know does that, please reach out, nynixpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you.
We are the New York Knicks.
I'm back. Back in the New York.
Ooh. Well, it's the Knicks.
New York.
We are the New York Knicks.
New York.
But this new season we're about to enter. The Knicks taking no short, just like winter.
New York, New York.
New York be about the Knicks, huh?
But the best thing about New York City is...
Everybody, welcome to the New York Knicks podcast, part of Dash Radio. Special guests today, we have Keith, Mad Hatter, and Angel, part of the director and stars of Orange and the Blues documentary. Thank you so much for joining us, guys.
Well, thank you
for having us.
Thank you.
I'm here as well. We have five. There's five of us in the show today, so we're going to go play 5-on-5 with another podcast after the show.
Okay.
Awesome. So these guys. So Keith Roberts made a documentary about Knicks fandom. It's pretty awesome. Keith, can you tell us a little more about the documentary?
Okay, so I actually started shooting, I think it was at June of 2021. My first shoot was at Game 5, you know, the playoffs against Atlanta, which, you know, of course the Knicks lost, but that was the beginning of it, you know. But it had been kind of, I've been thinking about doing this documentary for a long time. I've been a Knicks fan since 84, 85. Hubie Brown years, Bernard King was my favorite player. You know, we've been through a lot of ups and downs. We had some ups in the 90s. You know, that was like really my like golden period, you know, for me, you know, watching the Knicks make the finals and stuff. And just occurred to me, like, this is a film that has to be made, you know. I mean, coming from the perspective of Knicks fans and what we've been through, you know, and sort of what we've been put through. And so, yeah, it's by a Knicks fan for, you know, Knicks fans. Yeah.
Yeah, I got a couple themes from the documentary. First, Knicks fans must be the most diehard Knicks fans around because our team has been through a lot of misery, and yet we're just so goddamn loyal.
Yeah.
Also, that James Dolan, you guys are not a fan of, which most people are not. And that the 90s were awesome, and now we are waiting for just the NBA gods to turn it around for us.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much it. You know, I mean, Dolan, of course, was a big part of this, you know. You know, he has to be. But, you know, I wanted this to be really about the fans. You know, I think – I don't know if it made the actual feature film, but there was a line from one in the trailer, I think it was a fan I interviewed, and he said, you know, real Knicks fans don't worry about Dolan, you know, aren't consumed by Dolan. So I really wanted this to be about, like, the fans, you know. And but, of course, Dolan is a big part of the story.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, the Knicks fans, I mean, are – I have to say, what a couple years back, the Knicks were terrible. They won 17 games, and the year before they drafted, right before they drafted RJ, and game 17, or sorry, the 17th win, the last game of the season, MSG is going crazy for a team that just won their, that has the worst record in the NBA.
Yeah,
and that just says how awesome the Knicks fans are.
Yeah.
So Angel, can you tell us more about yourself and how your Knicks fandom?
Well, my Knicks fandom started back around 1988-89. I was about 7 or 8 years old. It was in the height, you know, the rise of Michael Jordan and, you know, just the rise of, you know, the popularity of basketball. And, you know, me not knowing anything, you know, I learned it from my dad. My dad has been a diehard Knicks fan since the 60s. And he's always been telling me, so you got to root for the Knicks. You're a New Yorker. And I think in the documentary, he even mentions it. Thinking some pride in your city and where you come from. And there's really no other team, you know, for the exception of like maybe one other one, you know, where the pride of New York is in full display. I mean, if you look at the Knicks uniform, it says New York. It doesn't say Knicks. It doesn't say anything else. It says New York. And I've been a fan of that. Patrick Ewing was my favorite player, even though, you know, growing up, for some reason, I kind of favored John Starks, and people thought that he was my real dad. Because I mimicked a lot of his mannerisms, and even the way he shot, you know, where he wore the wristband on the elbow and stuff like that. And, you know, I've been a fan ever since. You know, we've been through some doldrums, and we've been through some dungeons, and then we've had some you know, some gleaming lights of happiness and joy, and times to be prideful. But for the most part, it's a loyalty that, you know, that you can't put a price on, even though, you know, James Dolan tries to put a price on it a lot, you know, with the ticket sales and, you know, what it costs for merchandise and cable deals and all that other stuff. But for the most part, I'm very proud of my participation in this film, just because I wanted to exhibit what a real fan and what it really defines. It's more than just, you know, buying season tickets, more than just going to all the games and buying all the gear. It's an emotional investment. It's a true spiritual investment to an organization, to the city, to the garden, and, you know, to each other, the fans.
I have a question. You brought up the financial aspect of it. I love the Knicks, but, like, I can only afford to go to so many games. I want to take my son to games, and maybe I can afford one or two games a year. Do you think how expensive it is to go to a game holds back, like, the fandom in any way?
Well, obviously, it absolutely does. I mean, if you want to go to a Knicks game, like, I was checking out tickets for tomorrow's game in Brooklyn, and I found some suitable seats. Then I tried to look for that same game down the line in January at Madison Square Garden, and from the same area, the prices are almost three times the size. You know, the price, and I didn't ask why? Because it's Madison Square Garden? Because James Dolan told us that it's so? I mean, it's the same team in a, just a different venue. And I feel that your fan, first of all, if you can't afford to go to a Knicks game, your fandom is not questioned. I don't think that you can really put a price on fandom. However, you know, true Knicks fans, you know, they do make a financial investment, but it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, in season tickets or courtside. And besides, Madison Square Garden, you know, they cater to the celebrities and the corporate accounts, you know, around
yes.
the town. Yeah. And the tourists.
They sure so do. Yeah.
It's not even for the fan anymore. The most common fan sits behind Chase Bridge, where some of the view is obstructed. Unless, you know, you're just, you know, you're more financially able, or you save, like you just say, you save a lot of money to buy that one game that you possibly find, and you can get a decent seat. Aside from that, all the, you know, those prices for the concessions, for the entry, not to mention parking, if you, you know, if you don't take the subway, it's just ridiculous to me.
Yeah,
it is like you feel like they should be tacking the cost of admission onto your mortgage. Mad Hatter,
give it time.
Yes,
Mad Hatter, I'd love to hear about your Knicks fandom and what the team means to you.
Wow. Well, the team means to me, this is more than a team. This is family. My loyalty is ridiculous. It goes back when I was a kid in a barbershop. I wasn't into sports too much. I was in the chair. This is where ashtrays was in the armchair. Remember that? Okay, that's how old it was. So anyway, it was a gentleman in the chair, and the barber was bad-mouthing the Knicks. The gentleman raised up out the chair, and I thought, you know, I was still confused. But this guy, I mean, violence is not the key, but he wanted to get physical. But when my father explained to me, well, the barber said something bad about Patrick Ewing. And I'm like, Patrick Ewing, who is that? So it was explained to me. The first name was given to me, the Beast of the East. I'm a horror fan. So with that, it intrigued me. But anyway, it drew me to the Knicks. I am a diehard loyal fan to family, okay? So the Knicks is my family. These colors is my blood. I wear this right now it's cold. I toned down a little, but everything everything. If you know me or know of me, it's not just everybody call me. Right now, I'm in a place where it's destined. We was in the train station, on the train. Anyway, I'm known as the Mad Hatter online. I have birthed myself online to several groups. I own now, at this point, about 750 Nick hats.
I've been wearing
a Nick hat every day since my birthday. My birthday was June 16th. I have not repeated so far a Nick hat.
Can I ask you, could just interrupt, what is your prized Nick hat? Your best, the number one?
I have this top hat. I don't have it. I'm on my way to work. I need to work overnight. I have this top hat that I created. And over like hats that was destroyed or patches that I got, because like I said, it runs in my blood. I have a tattoo, Nick. Anything someone see that know me, Nick, they give it to me. So patches is all over this top hat.
Awesome. Do we lose Mad Hatter again?
Probably.
Hey, while waiting for him to come back, Angel, can you tell everyone what's behind you? Because you have some cool stuff behind you.
Yeah, I'm in my garage, and I actually try to fashion my garage into like Madison Square Garden in my own little way. Right behind me, you'll see the retired numbers. Every single retired number by the New York Knicks, from Earl to Pearl to Patrick to even Red Holzman 613, along with our only two championship banners hanging down. And, I have a Giants wall over here. I have a Yankee corridor over there. But this is my pride and joy right here is my Nick. It's like my Nick mausoleum in a sense. And it's something that, my parents were like, what are you doing? It's like, no, I'm turning this place into the garden because, just like Mad Hatter was saying in the documentary, and he said it just a little while ago too, the garden is like my home. I can remember, tons of memories that have happened at Madison Square Garden. And, not just Nick stuff, but the vast majority is as new.
Hey, Mad Hatter.
Yes, sir.
So I'm going to come back to you, but when you're not on, any chance you could mute yourself when you're not on, just because it's loud where you are?
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. Just no in the background of the air. But I meant to come back to you. We lost you before. I was going to ask you, besides the top hat, is that your, what is your, I guess your most prized piece of Knicks memorabilia?
My signature, I have a signature and a picture with John Starks that I received last year. It was everything to me. I went to an event to where I was supposed to meet a Nick alumni, and it happened that night. The next day, they said, hey, come down to a bar. It's going to be someone here, but they never explained who. And I got Raymond Felton and John Starks.
Nice.
And it was
awesome.
Pictures and autographs, and that's everything for me.
Awesome.
It's everything. And a picture of Frazier, that they had an event in 155th in Harlem this past summer. And I was able to actually sit with Walt Clyde Frazier. And I have a picture and a little video. And I think I was the only one that was able to get that close to sit with him and have a conversation.
That's awesome.
It's like everything to me.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So Mad Hatter has 750 hats. He has a tattoo. He's got everything. Angel has built the MSG in his garage. Keith, you're in kind of a barren room. Nothing around you. What's going on, Keith? You don't seem like much of a Knick fan at all. Where's the tattoo? Where are all the hats? Where's the mausoleum?
Well, I got the T-shirt. I'm a Knick minimalist. I don't have too much gear, but I share this apartment with my girlfriend. She'll kill me if I have too much gear. So we have a minimalist apartment here. So, it's all in here. It's in my heart. All the
awesome.
It's not on the outside. It's my heart. And then I made a film about it. So.
I was just gonna say you showed your love through making a documentary. So, yeah. So the documentary is awesome. Everyone should see it. I don't want to ruin too much of it. But I wanted to kind of switch gears now to talk about the current team.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you guys think? So the Knicks right now, I saw this online. I thought this was interesting. This is from John Hollinger. He said, are the Knicks a simulation? They are now 5-5 with a 0.0 point differential. They are 16th in offense, 16th in defense, 15th in SRS, which I don't know what even that is. They have played 5 home games and 5 road games. They are 1-1 in overtime. They are as middle of the road as you can be right now. 500. What do you guys think? Keith, you first. What do you think of the current team?
They're a 500 team. I don't see them win. Yeah. I mean, you just said it. I mean, all the statistics bear that out. I think they were, 41 win team, 38, 39, 41 win, something like that. But, they're an entertaining team at least. I mean, as you were talking about a little while ago, I mean, they were a 17 win team, a few years ago, 10 years ago or something. And, they're an entertaining team. They have good, there's some characters on the team, and they play hard under Tibbs. I mean, that's the one thing that, under previous coaches, they didn't play hard all the time. I don't know how much longer they could continue to do that, And I feel like Randall last year kind of gave up. I mean, a lot of the it didn't look good last year, his body language, and hopefully he continues to play hard. I mean, he's a big key, I think Randall's a big key into their success. But, I think they're a 500 team.
Angel, why should we be hopeful as Knicks fans?
We should be hopeful because for the first time in more than a decade, we have a point guard.
Yes.
And to be honest, I don't think that we've seen the best of Jalen Brunson yet. I feel that once he gets acclimated to, being here with the Knicks and getting accustomed to, to his teammates and chemistry starts to keep on working. I mean, Tibbs, for better or for worse, he's at least experimenting. And eventually he's going to figure it out and he's going to have something, or that's his job. But in the meantime, you have to be at least kind of excited with the fact that Jalen Brunson is on this team. We still have, the usual suspects. We still have RJ Barrett. We still have Julius Randle. Obi Toppin is, all of a sudden, is becoming a factor. I know we lost Mitch for a couple of, for about a week or two, but, he'll be back. Isaiah Hartenstein is where did he come from? And, I think there's, the Knicks are still a 500 team, but I think that they have a run in them. And, similar to that, the 9-10 game win streak that we had a couple of years ago. And I think that they can possibly make the play in. But, Eastern Conference is not a pushover conference as it used to be. There's a lot of good teams. I mean, Cleveland is amazing. You still got Milwaukee. You don't know what you're going to get out of Brooklyn or Philadelphia, even though they're starting off, poorly. But they're, it's just a matter of time till they start figuring it out. And, you still got the defending Eastern champs in Boston Celtics. I mean, they came to the Garden the other night and they handled business. And it was a good test for the team, for the Knicks, to go up against the defending Eastern Conference champions and take their lickings, because now they know what they're up against. They know what their competition is. And I think that, looking at statistics and, where the team ranks right now is kind of like, it's a little too soon. 10 games. I like to see what they do at 20 and at 30 games, and then who knows if the trading deadline, produces something. One will never know.
So like a week ago, a lot of Knicks fans were complaining about Tibbs. They said he's too rigid with the starting lineups, that he will never try Randall and Obi together, and just he doesn't really know how to experiment. Mad Hatter, what do you think of what you've seen from Tibbs the last week?
Well, the same thing I kind of see into Randall. Tibbs, he gave that a try. The same thing that you say and they complaining about, I have seen that, and it's working. Have you seen – we've seen that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so right now, as from – like Angel said, everything is fresh. But from what I see and from what Keith said, Randall wasn't giving it his all. He lost his confidence last season. But this season, from what he's producing and what he's showing more effort. He's smiling more. I feel the positivity coming from him like he was before. That game against Milwaukee, unbelievable. Win or lose, they had, you know, it's some games. It's not to me sometimes about the win, it's the effort. And they played these guys, because I seen them as warriors, and they fought and they battled, because that was a back. And Brunson, unbelievable. 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 This guy is like a mini tank.
He is thick. He is like he's not like he doesn't he's not the fastest point guard. I think if all the point guards in the league had a race, he might be in last, but just shifty and quick, and he can get around guys like I don't know how he always gets shots off and he gets to the basket. He's just good at like he does what you need to do on offense. I am in love. Brunson might be my favorite Knick, and he'll only be on the Knicks for 10 games.
And if you imitate him, if the other point guards try to imitate, it'll fall in line. And he opened the floor for everybody.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable how this guy, and you know, it's everything with the Knicks is like surprise each year. The same way how we getting, you know, like everyone said, I was seeing in groups, oh, this guy is not the savior, guys. He's not the savior. I mean, come on. I mean, I love Walker, Kimball, but come on.
I mean,
it's a big improvement.
Right now, with Brunson as a starter, and he's awesome, and then with between Rose and IQ handling backup roles, this is the best our point guard. Like, we have 48 minutes of like above average to just like it's an amazing way to have gone from the trash we've had for the last 20 years to actually having a real point guard rotation.
And the biggest talk of the town that no one talk about is the way he is not turning the ball over. Mm-hmm. That's all
yes.
I hear. This is all I hear. How this guy is. Think about how many times he so far have not turned the ball over. He makes the smartest decisions at the last. And then his face is like him and RJ Barrett give off that same. He don't move. RJ Barrett have a bad game. He don't show it too much. He don't show his frustration. Mm-hmm. Julius Randle he wears it on his sleeves. But the other two guys, they don't really show frustration too much. And Obi, oh my God, three pointers! He's developing three pointers. I love
he's,
it.
I have to say, last year, before the end of the year, I didn't think Obi knew how to shoot a three pointer. Mm-hmm. He would just throw up air balls. He was shooting like 20% through most of the season. It was almost getting to the point. I kept saying like, he's got to just stop shooting these. It's just not part of his game. Why does he keep doing it? And now, I have as much confidence in him shooting as three-pointers as anyone in the team. When he puts it up, I expect him to go in. It's crazy.
Yes. And then, like he said, Hartstein?
He prefers the German pronunciation, which I got from one of the games. Hartenstein or...
Hartenstein.
Hartenstein, yes.
See, I got into a thing in my house. I give people nicknames. So I call them Heart of the Team. I'm sorry. So that's why I was not. But you just like, who are the team? Who's that? Because this guy, anything that's coming off the boards, he replaced. I'm not saying replaced, but he filled in for Mitchell Robinson. Great dealing. He reminded me of what is his name that was on the Knicks? He came for a short time. No, tall guy. Dudley?
Chris Dudley? Okay.
Yes, sir. He reminds me of Chris Dudley for the boards and the way, but the putbacks that this guy does is I'm like, unbelievable. So it's like, aha, surprise. So for us as fans and all through the other teams, they don't know what they expect. Milwaukee kind of didn't expect that.
He's good. I actually looked up before this, Keith. Mm-hmm. I looked up the team leaders in plus minus. Through 10 games. Two guys are tied for first, and then there's the third place. You want to see if you can guess who are the top three?
Oh, God, I'm terrible.
So top three on the Knicks in plus minus. Angel and Matt Hattie, you're welcome to jump in also. Who do you guys think? Who do you think is
Brunson? Brunson's going to be first.
Brunson's one.
Brunson is not one. He's Brunson is not in the top three, actually. Brunson right now he's sixth on the team in plus minus.
In plus minus?
Yeah.
Well, because he's not that great a defender.
I mean, he's positive. He's right now plus minus his net rating, that is 2.6. But who do you think is see if you can
so Isaiah Hartenstein would have to be in that conversation.
Hart is tied for first.
Okay. I would say Obi Toppin.
Yeah, Obi's got to be there.
Obi is fifth.
I would give that to Fournier.
Fournier is not in the top.
Really?
No, I wouldn't think that either.
Fournier's last, right?
Hey.
Fournier's last.
The next two guys are bench guys.
Bench guys.
Oh. Yeah.
But Derrick Rose and Obi Toppin.
Rose is four. You guys, the two guys aren't that, like, you should get them.
I know who
quickly,
it is.
Quickly,
yeah.
Quickly is third. Quickly. Who's tied with Hart for first?
It's Cam.
The bench player?
Well, he's sometimes the bench player. Recent experiments, last night he started.
Okay.
So Grimes?
Grimes was it. Grimes is still out.
Okay.
He hasn't played enough minutes.
All right.
He was involved. He was traded to the team last year from the Hawks for Kevin Knox.
Cam Reddish.
Reddish, yeah. Reddish has been playing great D. Really good.
Yeah, his D has been really good.
He fills the passing lane. He's a good defender. That's why he's playing. Tibbs plays defenders.
The funny thing is that on our show, you know, the last preseason game, we were all over Cam Reddish and you know, just like getting on the fans. It was like, oh, play the kids, play Cam. He's got handle. He's got this. He's got that. And we were destroying this poor guy. Mm-hmm. Then comes the first game and we're like, oh, dude, I'm sorry.
He flipped the switch there. Yeah.
He looked like such, I mean, we overreact a lot in the show, but he looked like such garbage in preseason. I was like, this guy is like unplayable. Game one of the season, of course, he was amazing. And since then, he's been pretty like, he's been very helpful, basically. His defense has been better than average. He throws up some shots that I don't love, but generally he's been really good. And he's super athletic.
Yeah. And he's long.
He's long. It's going to be nice having him, especially when Grimes is back. We're going to have two 3-and-D guys, basically, who can play some defense.
Mm. Well, the good thing about Cam Reddish is that, I mean, you know, he has the experience with RJ playing at Duke. And he was a very good player in college and in high school. The problem was is that, you know, he just wasn't getting the minutes because he wasn't ready in Atlanta. And then he came to the Knicks and he just hadn't won Tibbs at all. And, you know, a lot of people were saying, oh, why don't we play him? Why did we trade for him? I said, well, we traded one bench guy for another. And that's pretty much what it was. The good thing about it is that, you know, he took the last season and really, you know, developed his game, really worked on his shot, worked on the key things that, you know, that Tibbs just loves, which is effort, defense, and, you know, just, you know, bringing a lot of energy. And, you know, Cam is right now, I mean, he's really earning those minutes and probably deserves a few more, you know, down the stretch, because he's getting, you know, crunch time minutes on top of that. So that, you know, that has to be, you know, say something to him and his work ethic.
I mean, it's a big deal also that, Fournier is obviously a veteran on a higher, not a nice gigantic contract, but on a decent contract. You would think with the way Tibbs usually coaches, he'd be guaranteed 25, 30 minutes a night. He'd be like hard to get him out of the starting lineup. And Tibbs is watching what's going on in the court. He started Reddish. Fournier played like 12 minutes last night. It seems like it seems like he's adapting and just going with the hot hands, which is what we wanted from him for so long. Mad Hatter, what did you think of Randall last night with his 8 threes?
Unbelievable. I think he was covering from that game. That's what they lack in playing defense against a team that can shoot threes. Because as we know, NBA is like, it's a 3-point system now. So the Knicks and Randall, I think it was more of a, you know, what happened in the game before. You know, because that's how you die by the sword. So he got like rebirth from the sword. And then what you go with what works from you. So it was, he kept going with it. And it was unbelievable. It was everything that everybody was orchestrating, passing, dishing out, it just worked. You know, I play a lot of 2K. and it seemed that it was like a video game. Like if you pushed up the status, because the way these guys was playing in being the visitor and they dominated, I couldn't believe this. And I was, you know, I work overnight and that was my late game. And I work where it's a clinic and it's closed. And I was in there yelling and screaming. It's unbelievable. Like I said, being a Knicks fan is something else, especially when we win. Because even wearing this here, this is not just an hat. You know, this conversation with this Brooklyn thing, hey, you wear a Brooklyn hat? Eh, whatever. This hat, when I wear this hat and we win, especially when we win and I walk the streets anywhere I be, especially in NYU, the hospital, and gentlemen walk by, because there's gentlemen that have one hat. I don't care what it look like, holes, anything. They wear their hat, we walk the hallways, nothing said. And we nod. Do this. Hey, here you go. What's the score? And then, you know, little conversation. And I know no one, no name, anything. Just because of this. Mm-hmm. Just because of this. You must understand, you know, like, you know, we talk about the ticket price and this and that. I willed and dealt with. I brought the cheapest. Because, like I said, the personality, the way you are, the way I am passionate, and the way people know how I am about this team. The cheapest Knick ticket, I wind up in skyboxes inside the suites. In the garden.
Awesome.
I have been pulled out on the garden floor and been getting pictures taken of me just because I wear my Knick gear from the sneakers to the socks to the pants to the underwear to the cups. I mean, I have it. I wear it when I go. From the book bags, I have it. And that's every game. Right now, like I said, there's no game. I got my hat. But this is game night. I have everything. Everything. Everything you name it, I will have it on from head to toe because that's how loyal I am to this family.
Keith, I want to point out you. So you found some like awesome Knick fans, diehard fans for the documentary. I feel like it's not even hard to find diehard Knick fans because the Knick fandom. There's so many diehard Knick fans out there, and you have an awesome documentary. If you want to make the lamest documentary, you should make a documentary about Brooklyn Net fanhood. It would be the like just like people being like. Yeah, I followed the team since like 2 years ago. I think it's about as long as anyone's been following them.
Mm. Yeah, this also seems to be like a lot of younger fans that follow the Nets. I guess they've also one thing that I learned from the documentary is that a lot of the younger fans follow players rather than teams. That was something that I picked up that was interesting. A lot they follow teams. Follow players.
I've learned that from the kids also, like that they tend to like whatever team they're on, like they're a Golden State fan when Durant's on Golden State, and they're a Nets fan because that's where Durant is. So it's like a different kind of fanhood.
I'm gonna confess real quick. My wife is a Nets fan. And
what?
Oh yes. Man!
So tomorrow night, you know, I mean, you see everybody know in the group that we fight. Her jacket, she have her little sweaters, black and white. She has that gray and black. She has a Net fan. But the real Net fans that I know are from New Jersey.
Yes, I agree with that.
I know Derek Coleman. These are real Net fans. My wife is a two-year Brooklyn. The only reason why she's a Net fan, I took her to a Net camp because she liked the Nets, and it's a party there. It's not really about the basketball. They play their music. It's a party there. If they lose, they entertain you with the party that they give up. It's like that. It's more of a, oh, my God.
So, Angel, what do you think of last night's game? They held off Minnesota. What do you think of last night's game? Do you think there's a lot to build on here?
Well, first of all, Minnesota, you know, they're still, you know, stumbling out of the gate, trying to figure out who they are as a team. Even, you know, with the acquisitions of Rudy Gobert and a healthy Karl-Anthony Towns, that, you know, they think that they, you know, they know who they are. I don't think they still have a freaking clue. And you know, I think that by trading deadline, you know, they're going to be looking at possibly, you know, maybe even getting into that Anthony Davis sweet safes. Who knows? But in last night's game, the Knicks took care of. They got hot early. They took care of, you know, they kept the gas pedal going. You didn't see them letting off too much. I felt that Randle played like, you know, out of his mind. I love how the rotations were working out. The minutes distribution was fairly well done. And I like the way how Tibbs managed the game and calling timeouts when he needed to. I think that's something that is a lost art in coaching in the NBA. You know, a lot of coaches don't get enough credit for, but figuring a way how to stop the momentum and to get their team back re-engaged on the mission at hand, which is playing defense and executing their plays the way they practiced them.
Yeah, no, the team, it was a great guy. The Knicks were up by like 20, 25 points, and I couldn't be like comfortable the whole time. Anytime the game got closer, because I have like PTSD from the Hawks game. So I keep waiting for the lead to slip away and us to be in like a dogfight. And the fact that the Knicks held on to the lead and like just kept like holding on, it was nice. It was nice to see some growth from the Hawks game.
Well, definitely, because nothing cures a bad loss like a good win and a solid win and a win where the team played 48 minutes of consistent basketball, which was something that the Knicks have been having a trouble to do for ages, playing four quarters all together and taking care of a team they're supposed to beat. The Knicks have talent. They do have some players. The only issue is that can they put it all together? Can they mold it? And, that I understand why most fans start to, go into panic mode about Tibbs. But, again, it's only 10 games. And at the same time, we have to be a little bit more realistic to think that, with the new point guard, new system, and, we're still, jigsaw puzzling this whole thing together. I still think that this team can, they can make some noise. How much noise they make remains to be seen. The game still has to be played. But I feel like the Knicks have enough talent to at least make it an interesting conversation in the Eastern Conference. Heck, maybe even in their own division.
I mean, they should be in pretty much every game. They have a strong – I like the starters. I like the bench. They have a pretty complete – they don't have the star-level player. But they have a very balanced team, a very good. I feel like they can go toe to toe with any. Like they may not win all the games, but they can go toe to toe with anyone in the NBA.
I definitely agree with that. I feel like that if we're gonna lose, let's lose respectfully. If we're gonna win, let's kill them. That's kind of been my mentality. My whole Knick fandom. Kill them if you can. Lose respectively if you must.
One thought I had from last night was so the Knicks fans, we wanted to go all in for Donovan Mitchell and it didn't work out. We didn't get him. Minnesota went all in to get Gobert, and I know he wasn't playing last night. But when you watch, and I haven't watched Minnesota really with Gobert yet. I only have to watch the Knicks and who they're playing. But you watch last night's Minnesota team. Do you think they look that much better with Gobert? It seems like the way it went all in for a guy that can't really help, he probably clogs the paint. He doesn't really, if anything, you kind of want Towns to be your center.
Yeah, however, Karl-Anthony Towns is more of a natural power forward.
He doesn't play defense that well also, but.
He can play the center at times if you want to go with a small lineup, but Towns, his skill set. When he played for the Dominican Republic in the Olympics and all that stuff, he's a natural power forward. He needs to be able to move. And, the center position, at least in the traditional sense, is a very stationary position. You're pretty much down low and, you're swatting shots on the defense. And on the offense, you're down low and you're posting up. He needs to be able to kind of, he kind of stretches the floor a little bit too much. And so therefore, he's more of a natural power forward, in my opinion. And one of the best power forwards in the league, but.
I get what you're saying. I felt like that, he kept shooting threes. I felt like if he just went down low, they kept feeding the ball in the post. He's almost unstoppable down there.
Well, it goes against his natural game. His natural game is being like a stretch. And unfortunately, the way the NBA is played, as Matt Hatter was explaining, it's difficult for, the big men to do what like the old, you know, like the teams back in the 90s used to do. What, you know, you can beat a guy down low,
right,
work a post, and you know, you have two or three guys down, you know, down in the paint ready, you know, to clean the boards. However, you can't do that now. You know, with the three in the key, you know, rule being heavily enforced, and you know, everybody being, you know, a three-pointer or a bust kind of team, Carl Anthony Towns and, you know, and a lot of big men have to play that kind of style game just to get, you know, just to, you know, to pay the bills. I agree with you. I don't think that Rudy Gobert was ever going to make the Timberwolves a contender in the West. I don't think they're even a contender in their own division. Considering, you know, who they have to play against, I think that, you know, that was a very foolish move to go all in for a guy that wasn't going to get you over the hump.
Yeah. Keith, moving on to another player that has started off cold, but is looking a lot better as of late. What do you think of RJ so far this year?
I think Knicks fans got to be patient with him because I don't think he's going to be an all-star, but I think that he's going to be a really solid player. He is a really solid player, you know? I mean, the one thing that worries me about him is his shot, his form. He's very inconsistent. But as a transition player, he's one of the best in the league, you know, going to the basket and getting his shots, you know, in transition. He's one of the best in the league. You know, I don't know. I mean, is it because he got the big deal? Sometimes there's the play goes down a little bit once they get the big deal, you know, once players get the big deal. Once they get the guaranteed money, I don't know if that's part of it, but I just think Knicks fans in general just need to be a little more patient with the individual players. And I just think he has a big upside. I mean, I think he can average 23, 24 points a game in the league. And like I said, I think he's one of the best transition players in the league.
I mean, we have a very intense fan base, we also have a very overreactionary fan base that is kind of cut. It cuts both ways, I guess. But I'd say so RJ obviously started off the year, had some bad games. He's looking better lately. I'll give you some signs of optimism on the shooting in particular. So he is now shooting from 2-point land. He's shooting over 50%, which he's yet to do in his career.
Yeah.
And that's a huge, him going over 50% from two point land is a huge improvement. He's also now over 80% on free throws.
That's good. Yeah.
Those two things are huge jumps in his shooting. His 3-point shooting right now is terrible, but he's been shooting last couple games, been shooting a little better. But if he can keep his just from inside the paint, inside the arc, over 50% and free throws 80%, he's going to have a really good year.
Yeah, and I also think that right now, because this whole Donovan Mitchell thing is so fresh, I feel like every time they look at RJ, they see like Donovan's face or something. It's like, why do we not trade this guy? You know, I mean, why didn't the Knicks trade him? And, you know, I don't know what, if they should have traded for Donovan. I mean, that's obviously a topic of debate, you know, but it's not RJ's fault, you know.
Yeah, and it wasn't just RJ. It was going to be a ton of picks, other guys on the team. Matt Hatter, how did you feel about the Knicks not getting Donovan and not getting Mitchell? How do you feel about that?
Well, I don't think they made a mistake. Like he said, like Keith said, you know, I think that you have to give him time. I watched Kevin Knox. He just never developed. Three years. The Knicks gave him 3 years. They gave Dennis Smith Jr. 3 years to develop. These guys didn't develop too much too well on that team. I watched them very well. RJ, he's off and on. He's off and on, but he builds up his confidence. I think he would do a lot better. I think he needs to focus more on driving the ball than taking 3-point shots, because I think he can draw the foul. He's a left-handed player. You do a lot better to protect the ball on that side of your body than the right side. So he could do a lot of effective if he drive more to the hole than a still shooter and shooting threes and trying to pattern and shoot threes. I think he would develop and, you know, give him a little time. But I think his confidence is up. I don't think that we made any mistakes at all. I think everything the way it's supposed to be. That's our biggest problem with as far as the Knicks. We shuffle the deck too much. How many players on that team actually who's the longest playing Nick?
Who's the longest playing Nick right now? It would be
it's Barrett, right?
Is it Barrett?
Yeah. Does that make any sense? Does that make any sense? Because really, look, he laughed.
Oh, it was Randall and Barrett.
Randall
and Barrett. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, there's not enough continuity. I mean, you need continuity. You need basically same players in the team every year, a couple changes here and there, but you need continuity, which we kind of had under Tibbs, though. It's been a lot of the same players.
It's been stable now so far, but, you know, we haven't had anybody, like, long-term. So, like I said, you have to – and this kid is what? He's not even, what, 25 yet?
He's 22. He's 22.
Yeah. Oh, come on. I talked to Mitchell. I took several pictures with Mitchell Robinson, at least a couple of appearances he showed up at. And he's like a big 16-year-old. That's how he reminds me. If you notice, I'm a 50-year-old grandfather. I have 10 grandchildren.
Wow.
So yeah. So I love the kids. Halloween is my Christmas. So I love the children.
Awesome.
So Mitchell Robinson is a big 16-year-old. He have not developed in his man. As you look at him when he walk, he walk like this, like a big 16-year-old. He holds on the backpack with two hands. When he developed and he put his hands down and he hold his back up and he walk like a man, like the Greek freak, this kid is going to be unbelievable. So you have to give these children time. They're on a big stage, and these wolves are the fans, and they out here like rah rah. Give these children time to develop into young men. You have to develop a boy into a man. But we talk about boys.
Yeah, speaking. So go.
Just a quick thing on stability, because one of the people that I interviewed for the film was Dave Checketts, and something that he said that was very interesting when he first came to the Knicks is that he just tried to. They were in like a state of chaos when he came. And he tried to like instill some stability in the team. And I think that's like so important, you know, for the next franchise is that there's some stability. And I'm happy that in the last 3 years, there has been some stability with Leon Rose. I don't agree with everything that he's done, but that is really the key to any franchise is stability. So if they can maintain that, I think that that's going to be like a really positive thing moving forward.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. We for so many, like it seemed like the last 10-20 years, there's so much turnover on the roster that it gets ridiculous. And it's hard to like patch a team together every year. It's nice to see the same names, the same players, and like just slight differences on the roster, but not an overhaul every year, not a new coach every two seasons, not a new team president or new GM every year or two. Yeah.
So, correction, the longest tenured Nick is Mitch. Thank you, Anthony.
Wow. How did we forget Mitch? What do you so speaking of development, what do you guys Angel, what do you think of what you've seen from Obi and IQ this year?
Well, I feel that Obi Toppin is taking, you know, huge steps forward. I'm glad because I remember when we drafted him how some people were very happy, but at the same time you were like, you know, we had other, you know, we needed a point guard. And again, I understood the whole situation at that time. We needed the best player available and we got him. I love the fact that, you know, he's trying to add more dimension to his game. He's not just, you know, the Showtime, you know, highlight dunk on ESPN every other night. He's trying to add some, you know, some different facets to the game quickly. I've loved him since we first drafted him. However, I feel like last year he took a huge step backwards offensively and his place in the rotation. I'm happy to see that he's actually taking a step forward and kind of like, you know, picking up the pace. You know, he kind of got over his sophomore slump and now he's more into, you know, playing the style of Emmanuel Quickly basketball that, you know, that we're all used to. I would love to see him, you know, take more command offensively and not just always defer to shoot. And, you know, I'm loving the fact that he's, you know, he's utilizing the floater. I think it's a lost art. It, you know, when a point guard comes in and uses a small floater, easy to, and you know, I'm loving the fact that these guys are developing into, you know, more well-rounded players and not just be, you know, a flash in the pan.
Yeah. I think IQ, his shooting hasn't been amazing this year. And I did like, he had a couple floaters last night. I liked what I saw from last night and like driving to the paint. But overall IQ, his whole game seems to be developing. His defense seems a lot better. His passing seems a lot better. He's rebounding. He got 16 rebounds the other night. I mean, I think Hartstein helped Hart helped him a lot with the rebounds. But like his whole game is looking so much better. I've been a big fan of what I've seen from IQ so far this year.
Well, most definitely, because if like I said, they're adding elements to their game and not just being a one trick pony. You know, even Mitchell Robinson, I mean, given he's not the most well-rounded offensive player, but he has taken some steps towards it. And I just wish that he would actually, take a better position in being a focal point in the offense and not just be, you know, high pick and roll up on top of the key, or pass off to a running screener or something like that. I would love to see him actually look for his shot. You know, maybe hook, maybe a simple layup. Those kind of things. I mean, any little thing counts. When you're trying to compete and you have a fan base that's expecting a championship every year.
Yeah, I've been saying for a long time, like, Mitch is so athletic. If he can have a little post-up game, maybe a little jump, a little baby hook, as you said, I feel like he could be even more dangerous. And the more the defense has to worry about Mitch, the better it works out for everyone else.
Absolutely. Even with RJ, I know we were just talking about him, but I feel like RJ Barrett, he's excelled in so much. And his shot is still yet to come around. But you have to remember, he's actually taking on a new assignment. He's defending point guards more often than that. I mean, the other night he was defending Trae Young. The night before that, I mean, you know, he had to go against Jaylen Brown. So he's chasing smaller guards on a constant basis. So, you know, his conditioning is really being tested. So I can understand why his shot hasn't been as consistent. But he really needs to work on that, because we're only 10 games in. We have 72 more games of this, and you know he's going to be chasing guys, that are going to be quicker. They're going to be smaller. They're going to be a lot more astute at looking for a shot and creating, and you know, can easily pop them up for a spot up three.
Well, so a lot of nights that RJ has been drawing the toughest, like all most of last year, he would always draw the toughest assignment on the floor. And there's a theory that kind of hurts his offensive game, because he has to like basically be on the toughest assignment on the other side, and that you have a guy like Grimes out there or Cam Reddish who can kind of take the hardest defense, the best offensive player on the other team, and let RJ not slack, but not always have the toughest assignment. It can make a big difference in RJ's game also.
Absolutely. I credit to this to back when Pat Riley was here, Pat Riley used to throw out guys like, you know, Herb Williams or Anthony Mason at the point guards just for, you know, say, hey, we just need six fouls and, you know, just be a deterrent. And that's something that I would wish that Thibodeau would do that for more often, because you just mentioned, they got Cam Reddish, they got Quentin Grimes. You got two guys that are long and pretty skilled defenders. You just have to put them on, you know, on somebody that they need to defend besides just like, you know, a spot up, that's hidden, was away from the corner three. I like to see more of those guys getting some more tough assignments and let RJ's game come to him as it naturally would, you know, just like it did, you know, a couple of years ago.
So on a different note, Mad Hatter, so if anyone's watching the YouTube, watching the video, they'll see you moving around. And I know you said you're heading to work. I think, just tell me if I'm wrong, I think you're actually right now investigating what's up with Grimes. You're on a mission. You're going around the city to figure out what happened. What's going on with Grimes?
Well,
is he ever coming back?
I don't know. Is he injured? What's going on? It's a question.
His foot hurts him. I don't know.
I mean, I'm ready to put him on a milk cart. Remember? It's the back of the milk cart. What's going on with that? Is it confidence? I mean, he's falling into that thing with the Dennis Smith Jr. You know, the confidence is everything.
Well, I think you don't think he's actually injured?
I don't know. I mean, sometimes guys will milk something because they can't fit in or has a, I don't know. Did he fall out of position? Because I kind of forgot about him. Because you got to put me on the spot when you mentioned him, because and he's not like he fell out the rotation.
I mean, I feel like he could be a starter easily for our team. Like his defense is top notch. I don't know. Do you guys feel like he's the odd man out, or do you feel like he's got a pretty big role in this team when healthy?
I honestly feel like, you know, like Quentin Grimes, you know, he was a talking point, you know, during those Donovan Mitchell talks. And I remember how Knicks Nation was going crazy about, well, we can't trade him because of his performance in the summer league. I'm looking at him like, did we really need him? You know,
I mean, yeah. I mean, if you're thinking about it, if he was healthy, he, like you said, trade. But now it's like, what can we do? I mean, if he get healthy, where you tell me, where can he fit in that puzzle right now?
I'll tell you. I think
as a starter.
I think I start him as our three. I think he's our two or three, whatever you want, wherever you want to put him. But I think he's I think he's a key to taking our team to the next level. Ooh. I think he's very solid defense. I think his offensive game is not. It's more than just shooting a three. I think he'd be a huge addition to this team.
Well, he needs to get healthy and get on the court because right now, you know, Brunson, Quickly, RJ, and Cam Reddish are eating up his minutes, and you know the more confidence that Thibodeau is gonna develop
exactly.
These guys. The less you're going to start seeing Quentin Grimes, and you're going to start seeing him, you know, sitting next to Deuce McBride, you know, sooner or later.
He had a promising before he got injured. He had a promising rookie year. I'm really hoping he's a guy that can really take it to the next level. I have to say, I was really like, I did not want them to include him in the. I was one of those people that said like, include the other guys. I do not want him in the Donovan Mitchell trade because I really think he has a really high ceiling.
I was one of those that like. I was okay if they included Grimes. I didn't have like such high stock in him or that much of an investment in him. I did have a much higher investment in guys like RJ and Randall and Mitch. But you know when you're talking about you know bringing in an all star that's going to change the whole face of the franchise and the direction of the franchise. I figured that that was an easy decision to make. However, once you start to realize what Danny Ainge was asking for and, you know, what he ended up getting from Cleveland, then I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I also kind of was of the feeling, like, Donovan Mitchell, obviously, worlds better than anything Grimes will ever be. But I was also the feeling that we're giving up all these draft picks. We should have to give up less certain players. I didn't know Cleveland would step in there and be like, take everything, basically.
Well, also, you have to consider where Cleveland is versus where New York is.
Right, right.
Cleveland is, you know, they were a playoff team last year. You know, no one saw that coming. No one predicted that they would be, you know, as high up in the seeding as they did. And, you know, Donovan Mitchell does make them better. They make them, you know, he makes them almost an Eastern Conference finalist. I don't know if it makes them, you know, an NBA finalist, but... you know, because you still have to deal with the Milwaukees and the Bostons and the Brooklyns and the Phillies. But at the same time, that, you know, Cleveland's now in that conversation. So that just puts another team in the Eastern Conference in front of the Knicks that, you know, that we eventually will have to, you know, kind of get over that hurdle. That's just another hurdle in the way of the Knicks finally, you know, getting one of these.
I actually had a thought. I don't know if anyone else has thought about this. Does anyone think that LeBron will finish his career out in Cleveland? Because now they're a contender. I don't know how many more years he has with under contract with them.
He has three.
Okay, so he'll be up there.
Well, I have rumor that that LeBron would love to play with his son. So I don't know about him going back to Cleveland, but I know he do want to play with his son before he's done.
I also heard another rumor I heard from an inside source on LeBron is that he really does not want to play with this current team he's on.
I was more making a joke.
It seems a disaster. Like how LeBron has had such an amazing career. He like guides where he wants to be. He sets up like Miami, Cleveland, goes to the Lakers, wins the title. He's now playing on a team that's going to be a lottery seed. He cannot. I mean, he's got to be shocked that this is where his career is at this point.
Yep.
Well, that's the funny thing about LeBron is that, you know, the LeBron lovers and, you know, and the LeBron haters, you know, that's kind of like, you know, they're bread and butter right there, because LeBron's is in L.A. They're pretty much, you know, an abysmal team, you know, as currently constructed. They're about to shop Anthony Davis. I know they still want to get rid of Russell Westbrook. Now you got to look for, you know, a well-rounded suitor that has assets for them. And I know Bleacher Report put out a freaking report.
This is the Bleacher Report put out an article today. And Bleacher Report, sometimes they put out good stuff, sometimes they put out trash. They proposed trade where the Knicks get Anthony Davis, the Lakers receive RJ, Mitchell Robinson, Obi, Quentin Grimes, and if that wasn't enough, 5 first-round picks.
Oh, my God.
Why would the Knicks sign up for Eddie Curry 2.0? Somebody tell me that. Like, Anthony Davis is injury prone, you know, to death. And I'm sorry, as good as a player as he is, because he is, he's a phenomenal player. But the guy is basically Eddie Curry, Amari Stoudemire kind of, you know, injury prone. That's how bad that is.
Anthony Davis is never healthy. He's just between injuries.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. It makes absolutely no sense to project, a winning combination for the Knicks. You know, if you have a starting rotation of Jalen Brunson, Quentin Grimes, Obi.
Right. Grimes was in the trade. Everyone's in the trade. The entire roster was in the trade, by the way, except for Brunson.
That would make no sense to me. The Lakers would have a better chance at talking to Chicago or Dallas. We'll also mention in the article. But
why wasn't the Empire State Building included? Why wasn't like the rights to the Jets and the Giants included? Like, this is insane.
Because those are included in players to be named later. I think it's part of the Bobby Bonilla trade.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So so going forward, you guys think 500, a little bit above 500. I guess, what do you want to see from the individual players as far as growth? Like, I would say, like, RJ, one thing I want to see from him more is sometimes I find that he'll just put his head down and drive into three players. He does that a little too often. I feel like sometimes he decides whether he's going to drive or pass beforehand. I'd like to see him stop driving into a packed paint and sometimes just like pass, be more willing, make a decision about passing more in the flow as opposed to making a decision beforehand. What other players would you like to see? What improvements would you like to see from players?
Keith, you want to go first?
I mean, like for me, I like to see Julius just continue to be in a good mental state. I think that's important, you know, him being in a good mental state and continuing to have a good mental state, even with RJ. I mean, like you said, I mean, also like RJ shot, just continuing to improve. I think a big part of it is mental with like Julius, you know, and that Julius is a big key to their success. And a lot of it is his mental with Julius. And I hope he can just maintain that, like sort of that positive mental state.
Do you think the Obi, Julius like combination, like on the court at the same time, is here to stay? And do you think it's going to be a successful combination for the Knicks?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can coexist, that they can play on them together. I think that they'll they have pretty good chemistry on the court. What kind of worries me a little bit is about Tibbs, because you know that saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, Tibbs is the ultimate old dog.
Yes.
And to me, the Knicks, what they did in their last game is they played hard and they played good D, you know? And I think Tibbs is going to absolutely make sure all this, you know, running and stuff and the pace and all that, that's going to fall off because Tibbs is going to go back to his basics. I know this is going to happen, you know? And that's not a bad thing, because that's why they hired him, you know, for them to play hard and to play a defensive-minded game. And hopefully they can fall into that and still have some offense. But I think the key to them winning, any team really winning, especially going into the playoffs, if they can make it into the playoffs, is defense. So I hope that they have that mindset, you know, that they are able to maintain that mindset for the rest of the season and they don't forget that.
Mad Hatter, what individual, like, what players, what improvements do you want to see from players?
Well, quickly. I think quickly. I think his decision making.
Okay, we lose it. This is Angel. You want to pick up on that?
Sure. I'm gonna guess that he was gonna that Matt Hatter was gonna say that he wants Emmanuel Quickly's decision making to improve. You know, for him to develop his shot, you know, and be able to create more. What I would love to see personally is I want to see what the big ballyhooed about Quentin Grimes is. I want to see what it, you know, why we kept him and why, you know, Knicks fans have, you know, this guy and, you know, really start to go crazy in terms of, oh, but he's our future. He's our future. As you yourself have mentioned. I would love to see Julius Randle to return to form that, you know, that got him the most improved player award. And obviously I will love, I mean, I don't think happened, but I really love if Jalen Brunson and RJ Barrett both represent us in the Eastern Conference All-Star game.
That would be awesome. Matt Hatter, before you cut out, you were saying about IQ. What did you want to see from him?
Oh, I'm sorry. As a point guard, I think that he's young. I think he can learn from, you know, as far as how he makes his decisions or how he when he comes off the bench. I think he burns out fast. I think as a point guard, I think he should take his time because, like you said about RJ, he drives when he drives to the hole, he drives into three players. But Brunson doesn't do that. He drives to the hole, so but he slows it down and he has this. I really can't really say it, but it's off the glass and he lays it up and it comes right off the glass. And he's a shorter player. Quickly throws a rainbow. If he creates off the glass almost the same way, he'll be an unstoppable point guard. I really think so. As far as developing there. Obi, I think he just instead of developing, continue what he's doing. Continue what he's doing. And Mitchell Robinson is developing to his own. I love the way he catches his alley oops. I really do. These guys is going to be something as they gel together. And Julius Randle is the captain, and he need to keep his confidence consistent. If he keep his confidence consistent, because it's an effect, mental effect, it affects everyone. If he's down, and I'm looking at you and you the captain, who else is there to look at? So he need to keep a positive mental effect each night, win or lose.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. So we're running low on time here. I want to ask you guys, Knicks have three games coming up in the next week. They play Brooklyn tomorrow night, which apparently in Matt Harris' household will be a civil war. They play Detroit and then OKC. What are your predictions for those three games? Keith, three games, Brooklyn, Detroit, and OKC. What's the Knicks record going to be in those games?
Which 3-0. I mean, they could beat all three of those teams.
Hell yeah. Angel?
Definitely 3-0. Brooklyn still in a discourse. Detroit and OKC are both teams that the Knicks should mop the floor with, and Detroit they already have.
Matt Hatter, do you have to say Brooklyn's going to win, or are you just to keep your wife happy?
Oh man, listen, I can't wait to rub it in her face. Listen, I can't wait to see. I have Kyrie Irving right now. I'm doing the Kyrie Irving thing with her. So she's not talking with me with that. So
you should.
We gotta have all three.
You should just show them play their last episode. I think Mark was imitating Kyrie Irving.
No. She's mad with me because I sent her a picture of last night about 3 a.m. of Kyrie Irving. I found a picture of him and Kanye West.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. So she was a little upset with me.
Do you ask her the other night? Hey, honey, do you want to take out the garbage? Because I know you really like dumpster fires.
Right. I said, oh well, guess what? We was in Marshalls, and I picked up a pair of sneakers, and I said, look, Yeezys. And then I said, yeah, Irvin's is gonna be a hit because I made a little joke. I said, the Irvin's gonna be marked down. Marshalls is the Marcus of marked down. So I said, we're gonna have these Kyries and the Yeezys right next to each other here. For $9.95. I remember a guy put a pair, like 60 pair of Starberries, and the price was like odd to me. $7.09 in a place called Rick and Barry's, Steve and Barry's.
Yeah.
I
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Steve, yeah. Like yeah.
Well, those were really, they were meant to be cheap. Like was his whole thing, basically. That a very affordable sneaker. Yeah.
They were like 20, 30 bucks.
And they were massively sold. Like, I mean, I don't know the US, but like outside of the US, they sold massively.
Yes, they did. Especially in China, because he was king. Yeah.
He was the greatest player in the history of China.
they have a Broadway play in China about Stephon Marbury coming there. It's crazy. So you never know.
Do you think the next greatest player ever in China will be Kevin Knox?
Oh my god.
I can see him going there. I mean, like, he's not long for the NBA. He could dominate in China.
It could happen.
I think Frank Ntilikina will have a better shot at that first before that happens.
Every decade, the Knicks should send over a player just to dominate China. Frank could do it also.
What's with the guys that the Knicks, when they leave, they have something to prove? Austin Rivers, what was that about?
Yeah, I like Austin Rivers. I just wasn't very that good on the Knicks. But, like, if you remember when he was here, he had that one game where he was lights out. Yes. Do you remember? Maybe it might have been against Memphis. I forget exactly where, or maybe New Orleans. But he was just on fire that game. Yes. He was goddamn awesome. And then he wasn't good anymore after
that. After that, he disappeared. Yeah.
Yeah. Jay, you want to jump in?
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, you can just lie, Jay. I'm on.
Sorry, Jay.
No, that's all right. It's all right. We're pretty much out of time anyway. Mark likes me to be the bad guy and tell everybody we're out of time. So,
this was awesome. The documentary is great. Everyone should check it out. Beyond the documentary, anything you guys want to plug?
Well, Sunday there's a viewing of the documentary at Tito's Barbecue in Harlem at 3:30.
Yeah, 3:30. What's the address on that, John?
I'm not exactly the address, but it's between 127th and 128th in Lenox Avenue. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's right in the location of Red Rooster. All the known restaurants are right there in the area. It's a very known area.
What's the name of the bar again for listeners?
Tito's Barbecue Station.
Okay, so just look that up. If you happen to not be in the New York area, you want to see this documentary, where else can you see it? How can we watch this?
So I'm actually in the process for arranging screenings. So there aren't any yet, but I've applied to a lot of film festivals, and then it'll eventually make its way onto Amazon. But right now I'm just kind of promoting it, like getting awareness about it.
Okay.
But there's a Facebook. It's facebook.com, and then it's Orange and the Blues Film. So if you want to, I'll be, updating it there. Soon we're going to have screening soon and the big screenings, but this one, on Sunday should be fun because it's really good food there and it's a good vibe.
And eventually it'll be on Amazon for like international fans.
Yeah. International fans, everybody, it's Knicks fans all over the world, it's great. It's great to see fans all over the world. It's such an international team.
Yeah.
With that saying real quick, that's the thing. I became best friends with a guy from Brazil. And I'm trying to get him here. And he's a Knicks fan. He podcasts. He interviewed me and a couple of other people. And me and him became, that's how the Knicks, this is what I mean about the Knicks. It draws family from, I never been to Brazil, but this guy is coming to New York and I'm going to be his diplomat and show him everything.
That's so awesome.
For that, yes.
And Angel, you got a podcast. Why don't you tell everyone about Knickerbocker Avenue?
Yes. So Knickerbocker Fan Forum, it's on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. But we do post games. So, tomorrow we play Brooklyn. So as soon as the final horn is sounded, we'll be live on Block Talk Radio. If you guys want to listen in or call in the show, because it's an open forum, the phone number is 929-477-4171. Or you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Knickerbocker Avenue, and you can get more information there.
Awesome. And Matt Hatter, anything you want to plug besides the Civil War breaking out in your household tomorrow night?
Well, no, not really. I'm just a diehard Knicks fan. Let's go Knicks. Good luck with us. That's about it. I'm a diehard fan, and I wish us well. That's about it. Other than that, I do my own thing. I have usually have viewing parties also, like little parties where we having this, not just you know, with the film, we also view the game. And then I buy merchandise and I have trivia and I give it out. So sometimes
awesome.
You think, yeah, I go beyond, you know, I go beyond. So sometimes I'd be looking for MSG to give me some items to give away. But this is how far it goes. I give away things like this, book bags. I create bears. Right now, me and my wife is, like I said, we relive it. I stop time. So I'm a big kid. Right now, I have this, I'm making a Christmas Nick wreath. It's going to be unbelievable. And I'm using Nick flags from the parties and things and put it together because we created that way. Creativity is everything. So we.
I'm going to bid on that myself. I'm going to look for you on Sunday and I'm going to be bidding.
I'm telling you, it's going to have a big blue and orange bow. It's going to be big and have the big neat Nick things. I already have one, but it's small. So I see when I'm going to make a nice big one. I have bears. I have bears like they have the what's those things called that used to be?
Build-A-Bears.
Build-A-Bear, yeah.
I brought the bears that you put in the microwave, the therapeutic bears. And I put Nick, yes, and I put children Nick uniform on these bears. Yes, I have one called RJ Barabbit. He's a rabbit. So RJ Barabbit, yeah. I have like a starting five. And they're pretty big. So I'm a big kid. I mean, I'm not home to show off my things. So, oh my God, you'd be surprised. But a lot of things are made. And that's what gives me my uniqueness. But I have events where, like I said, I even draw up the questions and I have Q&As and give out prizes that I go around and I collect the Nick items. Like I said, I target Marshalls. Me and my wife, I love her. And she takes me and we find these little Nick trinkets. You'd be surprised what you could find. You could find this cup in the NBA store is about $44. I found this cup in Target for $15.99.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So where do you announce these meetups when you have them?
Excuse me?
When you have these meetups, where do you announce them?
Well, right now, like I said, I had three at the Tito's Barbecue. I had three there. The first one, it was a good success. I had them a raffle. Well, I imitated. There's groups that had big ones. So I was attending. So I had small ones where I invite. We watched the game because I was doing that during pandemic at home. This is what I say. I drew up where I posted, go live and watch the game. And as I'm watching, I have the camera facing my TV, the 60-inch, covering the game, and I'm sitting there having a conversation with hundreds and hundreds of people.
Excellent.
Hundreds. And I didn't get to thousands. I'm in like five Nick groups, and I have at least so many people who know who I am. And it's so scary. I get on the train with people. I don't care what time of day it is. One guy was sleeping, and he heard me talking, and he woke up. It said Mad Hatter.
Wow.
And this is true story. This is my wife, my daughter, they will tell you. I talk about my wife and my daughter so much, these people, and I say happy birthday to them. They'll walk up to the screen. Hey, you Mad Hatter. It's white. People would get out of cabs and shake my hand out of nowhere because I drew this fan base. Because
you look like Spike Lee, too.
Oh, that was about to say.
Yeah, you have that resemblance.
Well, I want three Halloween costumes doing that.
Yeah, I was about to say because when we were filming, every other person stopped me and Mad Hatter and said, Are you Spike Lee?
In front of anywhere near the garden, anywhere around the garden, yes. And anywhere with me and Keith, yes, is on the film, anywhere in the cab, yeah. As long as I have one orange and blue, I look exactly like him. I'm looking for a commercial. Now, that's my idea. Means I want to pitch this to him. Me doing what I'm doing, I do maintenance. So to show me in my uniform doing maintenance, show him doing what he do during the day. Then it's game time. Then show me dressing, show him dressing. I'm on the train, however he get there. Now we at the garden. They grab me up. Hey, Spike Lee, this and that, and pull me in. He get there. Where's your ticket? Whatever. Yeah. So, you know, I'm pitching it. I'm trying to pitch it, but I need to get a hold of him to say, hey, I'm your doppelganger.
Careful though, gotta be careful. He doesn't have that private entrance anymore.
Oh yeah, I know.
Yeah, you may not get the treatment you expect by being looking like him.
Well, he's getting ready to do a documentary for them, so he's going to get back. Yeah, so he's getting ready to get into the, you know, back to where he used to be, as far as with the Knicks, because he's getting ready to do a nice documentary with them.
Well, Spike, if you're, I know you're not listening, but if you are listening, you should invite Mad Hatter to the game to sit next to you at the game, because it'd be kind of awesome.
Oh, that'd be nice. Yeah, that would be nice. That would be, oh God, I would die a happy man. Instead of meeting Patrick Ewing, because I need to meet Patrick Ewing.
That'd be pretty amazing also.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah. Yes.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Booth, November 13th, Tito's Barbecue Station, 3:30. Don't be late.
Yes. Anyone who want to attend.
All right. Everyone check it out.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to play the goodbye song. Thanks again, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Happy trails to you. Bye. Bye, love.